I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. The School Reform Commission was created in 2001 by Pennsylvania state lawmakers to oversee the School District of Philadelphia. Three members are appointed by the governor and two are appointed by the mayor. This was a tumultuous and controversial year for the SRC, marked by the discovery of a $600 million budget deficit, the expensive and messy departure of Superintendent Arlene Ackerman, and revelations about closed-door meetings involving a dispute over a charter school operator. Four members of the SRC have resigned. Mayor Nutter has appointed two people to the commission who join us on Radio Times, Wendell Pritchett and Lorene Carey. Wendell Pritchett is the Chancellor, Chief Executive Officer of Rutgers University across the river in Camden. He has taught and served as Associate Dean at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. And Wendell Pritchett, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
Also with us, as I said, Lorene Carey. She's a novelist, and back in 1998, she founded the nonprofit Art Sanctuary. She's a senior lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania and has been a guest many times talking about her books on Radio Times. And Lorene Carey, nice to have you with us as well.
Thanks, Marty.
Governor Cormitt has nominated two new members to the SRC who await confirmation, one of whom joins us on Radio Times. Pedro Ramos is an attorney with Trujillo, Rodriguez, and Richards. He's also served as City Solicitor of Philadelphia, Managing Director of Philadelphia, the President of the Board of Education of the School District of Philadelphia, and the Vice President and Chief of Staff to the President of the University of Pennsylvania. Pedro Ramos, nice to have you with us as well.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. I should add that the governor has nominated another member to the SRC just last week, Feather Houston, the former DPW Secretary and former head of the William Penn Foundation. We are happy to have all three of you with us today on Radio Times. And perhaps, Wendell Pritchett, can we begin with you? You are, I guess, the temporary head until Pedro Ramos gets confirmed and then would take over this particular job. What do you see as the number one priority for the SRC?
Well, the number one priority in the long run is to make sure that every child has an opportunity to attend an excellent school, and every child has the opportunity to attend a safe school where they will be provided for, and that their future can be secured, that they can go to college and be successful in life. So that's, you know, that's what our challenge is. There are lots of intermediate challenges to get to that point. Certainly, there are challenges with the budget that continued. There's a challenge with regard to the executive leadership of the institution, that we have an acting superintendent right now. And there are many other challenges with regard to policies, with regard to charter schools and things like that. So there's a lot of work to do.
Yes, there is. How about for you, Lorene? What do you see as the number one, I guess, challenge facing the SRC?
I think the first, sorry, Marty, radio doesn't,
no,
I'm
you're
not
fine.
Always fast
no,
enough
you're
for radio,
fine.
Right?
You're fine.
I think the when I look at the largest challenge for the SRC itself, it's to the SRC is not a school board. You know, it's got different powers, and when you're overseeing an organization that has had troubles, you both have to support that organization and listen really carefully to all of the many people outside the organization who are critiquing it, trying to help it, want some input to make the thing better. So I think for the SRC coming in, that's the hardest part. You've got to support the folks inside to do their job better. You've also got to listen really carefully and learn what we're not doing well enough.
Pedro Ramos, and I realize you have to be confirmed, but nonetheless, I mean, it looks like you probably will be confirmed. Nonetheless, do you think the SRC has to, in a sense, fix its reputation?
Wendell talked about things that have to be established as foundations for the school district really to be able to achieve its mission of ensuring a safe, quality opportunity for every child currently, and we also have to think of future children. We're stewards for both the present and for the future. But I do think that among the things we have to do to establish a firmer foundation is to rebuild, re-earn public confidence. And mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. you know, our standards are only as high as those that we set for ourselves. And we demonstrate that through our actions and deeds day to day. And I think the incoming board is very mindful of the need to not only do but demonstrate those qualities, and to be a lot more active in engaging the public and listening and on acting.
And do you think it's those kinds of specific things, more, I guess, more transparency, more openness to outside either observations or criticisms or suggestions, things like that?
I think transparency is a big part of it, whether it's sharing data as part of asking for help and input, as far as making our, you know, having more accountability through that transparency. And I think a lot is also looking at how looking at the school district we have today, which is organized, in my view, for the school district we had 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And taking these times that are necessarily times of transition to not just fix things around the margins, but try to find a better way of supporting each classroom and each school.
Because we're talking about a system where you've got charters competing with, I guess, competing in a good way, hopefully, with, mm-hmm. with public schools. It's not the kind of school system, as Pedro was saying, Wendell, of 50 years ago.
No, that's exactly right. You know, both my parents spent their whole careers working for the Philadelphia Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And so they brought it home every single day. And it is really interesting to note how many things have changed. Loreen, we were talking about this earlier, and Loreen pointed out that historically we've been asked, schools have been asked to teach increasing numbers of kids. And in general, not completely, but in general, the children have had more challenges. The students that we've been asked to teach have had more challenges than the group of students that we had before. And that's a wonderful thing.
Because of poverty?
Because of poverty, just because, 100 years ago, a lot of kids didn't go to high school, for example, for lots of reasons. And so the things that have been asked of schools have increased dramatically, which is a good thing. We should require those things. But as Pedro said, the challenges facing schools today are dramatically different than they were 50 years ago. I mean, the challenges that kids have coming from different communities are complicated. The places where their parents come from all around the world are very different than they were 50 years ago. I mean, so the challenges are much more complex today than they were 50 years ago.
And we also...
Go ahead, Lorraine.
I think fundamentally in our country, we have been deciding, not always, we said it foundationally. We said, all men are created equal. We said all men. But we are still growing into a country that believes that every child is as worthy mm-hmm. of life, liberty, justice, education, as every other child. 1850, I forget the number. It was a crazy number of young people who were put out of schools in New York City because they didn't have shoes. They didn't have shoes. Well, who else needs an education mm-hmm. more than kids who don't have shoes, right? But so now we're trying to get those children in, and children with dyslexia, and children who can't see, and children who are there's an enormous number, and I don't want to say how many because I don't have it right in my mind, of kids who are being raised by grandparents, guardians, non-parents, all of these children. But it's from these kids that we'll get, in the next generation, we'll get cures, we'll get understanding, we'll get more compassion, we'll get math skills, we'll get astronaut. They're coming from this group.
But we have to
educate them, or else they won't.
But I'm thinking of a parent, let's say, who's sending a child to a school in Philadelphia that, frankly, is a school that's not providing the education that, mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. want. And there are thousands of these families, thousands of yep. these kids, where they feel like, I am not getting what I want for my child. Pedro Ramos, what can the SRC do for that family?
Well, I think, we have to start with a sense of urgency about meeting our obligation to provide safe, quality opportunity to that family, that child, today. While we try to address systemic challenges, I think an opportunity we have as a new SRC is to bring that sense of urgency down to the parent level, to the school level, to the classroom level. I think there was a time where we could say, well, we have a long-term plan, and at least and public, just bear with us, in a few years it will be better. I think those times have have passed,
and legitimately so, don't you think?
Legitimately so, and we have to, I think, organize ourselves in a way that we can act a lot more quickly. Mm-hmm. On a better note, when I first went on the board the first time in 1995, I was 30 years old. And the strategic plan at that point, the first point of it was all children can achieve at high levels. And a lot of people would say that. A lot of people would mouth that. A lot of people would sort of nod their head when you said it. And I'm very active in a lot of boards. I'm very active in the community here. One thing that I can observe about now versus then is I believe that today more people believe that. And I think through some of the things that have worked at the school district, through some of the things that the more successful charters have done, I think that that people now believe that regardless of the challenges of a child's family, that almost at any point the schools can can perform for a child given doing what is right by that child. So I think that puts us in a position where there is, I think, fundamentally more optimism. I think people believe this can be done, and it's really up to us to act with urgency to find the way to take this huge organization and make it a lot more student-centered, a lot more school oriented.
Go ahead with Bridget.
So first of all, since we're ready, I have to point out that Pedro doesn't look any older than he did when he was 30.
You're just buttering him up so that he can take your job. Yeah. I understand.
No, not at all.
only on radio could you say that.
But just to add, I agree with what Pedro said, but we have to be open-minded about a lot of different approaches to education, lots of them. And we have to look at what works for individual children. And I have to say, being an optimist, I am, that we've made some progress. I mean, there are a variety more options today than there were 15 or 20 years ago. And many of them are working. Some of them are not. That's another challenge that we have to make sure that we move away from the ones that aren't working. But lots of these options are working. And we need to figure out ways to scale up the ones that are working and to organize, as Pedro said, the school district around things that work for kids. That's what everything we should be focused on has to be answering that question: what works for kids.
And we're almost about to break here, but I'm assuming you're talking about good teachers, involved parents, classroom materials, a safe school environment, kids that have enough to eat and are ready to learn. I mean, is that what we're talking about?
Yes. Plus, I mean, we also know that there are ways that children learn in different ways, and we're starting to understand the science of that. And so we have to identify what ways individuals learn, and then target our resources in those ways.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We're talking with three members, or near members, I should say, of the School Reform Commission. Wendell Pritchett and Lorreen Carey were nominated and are now sitting on the SRC board and appointed by Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter. And Pedro Ramos, nominated by Governor Corbett, and he awaits confirmation, as does Feather Houston, who was also nominated by the governor last week. We are talking about how to make schools work here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Orchestra supports WHYY. The music of Sir Edward Elgar could inspire the empire. Charles Dutoit and the Philadelphia Orchestra present Elgar's Enigma Variations. Also, Robert Schumann's Cello Concerto with Gautier Capuçon. Tickets online, philorc.org. By phone, 215-893-1999. October 28th and 29th at the Kimmel Center, Elgar's Enigma Variations with Charles Dutoit and the Philadelphia Orchestra.
I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We began this morning 650 members short of our fall campaign goal. In order to pay for the programs you enjoy and rely on, we need to hear from you. We've extended the membership drive just a few more days because we need to make that goal. It's just that simple. So make a pledge, make a difference right now at 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at whyy.org. It's a group effort, 1-888-345-9499. Thanks so much.
JerseyArts.com supports WHYY, featuring details on American Repertory Ballet's presentation of The Nutcracker, November 25th through December 18th at McCarter Theater, Patriots Theater at the War Memorial, TD Bank Arts Center, and State Theater, New Jersey. A full schedule of performances and events at arballet.org. American Repertory Ballet, and more, online at jerseyarts.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking about the School Reform Commission. They do have their work cut out for them here in Philadelphia, restoring confidence in the commission, addressing the district's budget crunch, and ensuring quality education for all public school students. Lorene Carey, Wendell Pritchett, and Pedro Ramos are guests, and we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Lorene, let me go to you. I mean, the reason there's an SRC is because the state took over the school district 10 years ago, and the idea was to create some kind of competition within the city to give parents a choice in many ways, and to try to figure out what works when it comes to education. And I think for many people, they see it's charter, you know, versus the public schools. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, as a member of the SRC, how you see that relationship.
I was learning about this just since in the last couple of weeks, and one of the things that Pedro said to me was that we, the school district, not only runs schools but also funds schools. So charter schools are funded publicly and are part of our sort of part of the whole ecology now, so that anytime anybody, you could either think of it from inside the school district, which is this is what we do, mm-hmm. or if you step outside, you say these are our various alternatives here in the city. We were just saying, sort of looking at numbers this morning, that 60% of children in the Philadelphia city go to School District of Philadelphia schools. About 20% go to charter schools. And about 20% go to private and parochial schools. So we've got this mix, right. And part of what you do is you figure out, if you're thinking child by child, what's useful for that, for this child, what works for this child. If you go up to a sort of a higher policy level, then the question is also how do they respond? How do they relate to each other? Mm-hmm. How open is the district to learning from, working with the charter schools? That's huge. And then even sort of another higher level of policy is how do you bring in thinkers, academics, the other cities' information, other experiences to learn how to do it better? And one of the things Wendell was saying was we are not, nobody here is bragging yet. We're hoping that in a few years we'll have something to brag about. Right. That's the fact.
Right.
But it is still true that there's a lot worse going on, God help us all, and God help the children, in charter schools around the country, that we actually have a great opportunity here to do better with charters. We have more of them, and we have more really high-performing ones.
Let me read something from Arlene Ackerman, who did leave. I have to say, a very messy summer, but she did leave, and she was the school superintendent. She wrote something in a guest column for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She said, "Recently, I've come to a sad realization. Real reform will never come within the system." She's talking about the Philadelphia school system, because too many powers that be, the teachers' union, politicians, consultants, vendors, etc., have a vested interest in maintaining the status quo that is failing our children. Meaningful education reform must be forced upon the system from the outside by giving parents of all income levels real choices about where their children want to go. And then she goes on, frankly, to support a voucher program, which is something that the governor supports. Do you think she's right about that, Wendell Pritchett?
I think that she's right in the sense that there has to be a major push from outside the system for real reform. I only had one board meeting under my belt now, but the first thing I said at the board meeting was, one, that we were going to operate as a board transparently and efficiently, but two, that this was everybody's responsibility in the whole city and the whole country to promote decent education for everybody. So in that sense, I agree with her. Mm-hmm. Everybody has to be pushing for reform. However, where I disagree is that reform has to come from both inside and outside. And we have to act as partners to make sure that we achieve the goal that every kid, every child has an opportunity to get a good education.
And not to put a wet blanket on this, but, you know, I've interviewed a number of superintendents who've come into town mm-hmm, over the years. Mm-hmm, we've done mm-hmm. many, many schools about school mm-hmm. reform. We've talked about charters.
Yeah.
We've talked about all the ideas to help children learn. And so I feel like, Pedro Ramos, I have heard this before. Well-intentioned people come in and say, we're going to do it right this time.
Well, I think Wendell, you know, is 100% right. There is no, to the extent anybody comes in and says, I'm going to do it, or any group of five people says, we're going to do it, if you hear that, then we either don't know or we're being dishonest. The reality is that this is an enormous public challenge, an enormous public enterprise that requires public engagement. It requires the public being involved. It requires a governance body that fulfills its duties, that's open to the public, that's willing to learn. It requires a leadership team that's not personality driven, that can get a lot of capable, smart people that are able to not just have good ideas but implement them effectively with public support throughout the city. So hopefully one thing we've learned is that it really does, it really at the management and organizational level, it's going to take a very talented team. I don't think we're looking for Superman or Superwoman. I think we're looking for a super team of capable people. And at the governance level, I think we have to make sure that as we're doing it, no matter how hard, no matter how big the challenge is, that we're being very open and candid with the public about what the challenges are that face us, and not pretend to have all the solutions when we don't.
Go ahead, Lorraine.
And the one of the things that is true there is that public pushing has everything to do with it. Power doesn't concede, mm-hmm. right, without whatever it is, I forget, a fight, a right, you know. The fact is that we in America demand that we have an excellent army, and we do. We demand it. We insist upon certain things being right. We have not insisted in the same way. We say we want it. Mm-hmm. But in fact, one of the problems with those numbers we just had is that often people say, look, I demand it, but I've got 18 years for my kid in school. I've got 13 years. I can't wait for a fix. I'm out. So there's a lot of that goes on. Some of that is good in that there's much more spread out understanding about what excellence is for different kids. There's that, but it's also true that we haven't said, no matter what, this has got to be good. There are excellent schools. There are excellent public structures. We in America can do both.
And I think at the end of the day, it's about expectations. I think for the parent or prospective parent of a chronically underperforming school, if they should be demanding a safe, quality opportunity for their child.
And
period.
I think they are
absolutely, and we have to hear them, and they have to also feel that if they do, that they will be heard. Similarly, in areas where we've had an infusion of population over the last 10 years, so the first time the city's population has grown mm-hmm. in the last census, we also have to make sure that we're not. We have to stop being a reason that people leave the city. Mm-hmm. That tax base mm-hmm. is critical, not just for that tax base is critical for providing for all children in our schools. And we have to both make sure that we're increasing that we're turning around poorly performing schools, and that we're expanding the opportunities mm-hmm. in schools that are working well.
Let me throw out something else, and again, this may sound like a wet blanket, but at the same time, there was a story in the Philadelphia Inquirer about a little boy, a six-year-old boy, mm-hmm. was being beaten up by students. He was attending Patterson School in West Philadelphia, mm-hmm. according to the paper. Mm-hmm. His father pled with the teacher, with the principal, the mm-hmm. district supervisor, and did not get a response. Apparently, that child is now attending a different school. Mm-hmm. But I read that. Here's a six-year-old boy. Mm-hmm. This family immigrated to the United States from Liberia, and this little boy, I'm looking at you, Wendell, mm-hmm. this little boy is being beaten up on his way to school.
Yeah, it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. It is unacceptable.
It should never happen. And though we have directed the school district leadership to investigate this, I know for certain something has to change. I mean, there's something went wrong there. We don't know exactly what went wrong yet, but something went wrong. The acting superintendent has written personally to the family to try to engage with them to understand what went wrong. But that's just unacceptable. Yeah. That's all there is to it.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, this was going on for several weeks.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And this child was suffering and being beaten up.
Yeah.
And there, one of the, it's one of the reasons why this back and forth between public and institution, oftentimes an institution does not like it when the press does these things.
That's
but
right.
It has to happen to make sure that if something, if everybody is running around with lots of, you know, big deficit, big things, and something rises up like that, I think it's super important that the acting superintendent pay attention, that the SRC pay attention to it. And the other thing is that we should pay attention to the children who beat him, because they are as likely as he to be scarred by this incident and go down all kinds of paths to a life that's not
so they need
no
intervention.
Good. Amen,
as
amen.
Well.
Amen.
And there's a lot of work going on nationally on on anti-bullying, and you know that really has to be an area that the school district has to lead on. It's an area I think safety is often an area in my experience where educators just feel a little bit, you know, a little bit more often feel a little bit out of their arena or out of their depth. Do you think it's a police issue? You can't figure out whether it's a police issue or a classroom, but it really is for parents and for children the threshold issue.
Sure.
You can't engage in reading and arithmetic if you don't feel safe in your environment. And it, I think the SRC and the school district leadership really have to escalate the level at which, you know, at which we're dealing with student safety and climate issues. And I think some of the national anti-bullying efforts are an opportunity for us really to look at opportunities to lead. And a lot of that, I think, comes through our practices more than things you have to actually buy or pay for.
And the school district, just me, LNT, the school district has to be completely honest about the challenges. There are challenges in many schools, and we have to be upfront about them. And then we have to ask for help from everybody, including the parents, to make sure that we meet the challenges.
And we are hold on just one second. I just need to quickly reintroduce you. We are talking about the Philadelphia schools, and we have two members of the School Reform Commission, two new members. Lorene Carey is a novelist, the founder of Art Sanctuary, a senior lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania. Wendell Pritchett is Chancellor and Chief Executive Officer of Rutgers University across the river in Camden. Pedro Ramos has been nominated by Governor Tom Corbett to sit on the SRC, and he's an attorney here in Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What would you like the SRC, the School Reform Commission, to do? Give us a call, 1-888-477-WHYY. Lorene, did you want to add something?
I was going to say that we talked earlier about finding ways to spark conversations and bring in all the resources that are available. This is an absolute perfect example, and I think we've already begun talking about not just aspirations but also some strategies to bring in the best thinking, to get the public engaged, but engaged in a way that's not just saying is not just after something bad has happened, but how are we going to, as Pedro said, change our practices?
Be proactive on this important issue. Let me get, looks like Jessica from Chestnut Hill to join our conversation. Jessica, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Speaking of strategy, I was just wondering what the panel thinks the role is for the private sector to play in partnering with the various constituencies that are hoping to move the dial a little bit on school reform.
Wendell Pritchett, can I toss that to you?
There's an enormous role for the private sector. So the mayor and the governor have set up a private sector board to examine certain aspects of the school district's operations. And that's an important task that's going to happen over the next 6 months. The mayor and the governor have already announced that. But there are many, many other opportunities for the private sector to be involved in individual schools, to be involved in mentoring programs, to be involved in helping us think through what should public education look like 5, 10, 20 years from now. So I can't think of any aspect that the private sector shouldn't be involved in.
What about for you, Pedro? Anything you want to add to that?
I just emphasize Wendell's last point. The important part of the private sector, I think, has to be a lot more outspoken about what how our students are, and I think this is a regional issue, not just a Philadelphia issue. I think the private sector has to be a lot more outspoken about the graduates that they are getting, not just from Philadelphia, but from graduates in the region, and what their needs are, and what have to be a lot more engaged in the standards discussion. And in this region, I think we're fortunate in the Philadelphia area that we really do have a culture that's very public-spirited. I do think that people in Philadelphia just volunteer enormous time and talent and energy towards nonprofits and towards government. And sometimes all we have to do is ask.
Right. They're already putting in a huge amount of money. I don't think we have an in-kind number yet, but the private sector is already doing lots of – it's a little scattershot because – the district has not had the capacity, and that may be a private sector. Mm. You know, we're talking about private sector helping with the capacity to take in all of this goodwill. But people are doing through nonprofits, through community organizations, through personal donations, are already filling in enormously.
Let me read something from Helen Gim, who I know you all know. She's been a guest on Radio Times of Parents United. And she wrote something recently, and this is looking at the next superintendent. There's an acting superintendent. She said, "No more messiahs, no more reform. There's a popular notion that somewhere out there is a mythological superintendent who, if we pay enough money and stay out of the way, will fix our schools." Mm-hmm. Wendell, do you want to respond to that?
I agree with Helen on that. Yeah, I do. I think she might exaggerate how much we think that there is a super person out there. But certainly it is true that when people have come in, they've been depicted as, you know, these are the savior. Pedro already said this. There's no one savior. This is all of our responsibilities. It's our responsibility as a commission. We have to have a team, as Pedro already said, but we have to have partnerships with everybody in the city to make sure that, and the region, to make sure this works. So I agree with the core statement. I think she might overstate it, but I agree with it.
But does there need to be a permanent superintendent? I mean, that decision needs to be made sometime soon, Pedro?
I think if we'd like to find a leader for the school district that has a track record of building excellent teams. I think we understand that in some areas, the school district needs more and better ideas. Often is the case that we need better execution. We need people that can really implement good ideas and can organize the right level of talent around doing that. And I think that will be our priority. To get a person like that, or to retain a person like that, and for any period of time, I think we have to get our house in order. Mm. And that's job one for us, is providing some stability. I think bringing greater transparency to some of the fiscal challenges, some of the safety challenges, and putting all that on the table and showing that you have a new SRC that is working very closely and collaboratively with the mayor and the governor. The Mayor Nutter and Secretary Tamales in particular have struck up, I think, a very constructive and close relationship, and I think we're that gives us all hope going forward.
And that's Pedro Ramos, who joins us along with Lorene Carey and Wendell Pritchett. We are talking about the School Reform Commission and schools in Philadelphia. Just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Call us. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Support for WHYY is provided by Interact Theater Company, currently opening its 24th season with Sarah Treem's new drama, The How and the Why. Inspired by the best-selling book, Woman and Intimate Geography by Natalie Angier, The How and the Why pits two generations of evolutionary biologists against each other while both negotiate the fiercely male-dominated world of academic science. Evolution and emotion collide in this thought-provoking play about science, family, and the survival of the fittest. Tickets at interacttheater.org.
I'm Marty Moscow-Wain. We began this morning 650 members short of our fall campaign goal. In order to pay for the programs you enjoy and rely on, we need to hear from you. We've extended the membership drive just a few more days because we need to make that goal. It's just that simple. So make a pledge, make a difference right now at 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at whyy.org. It's a group effort, 1-888-345-9499. Thanks so much.
The Hill School supports WHYY. A private coeducational boarding school located in Pottstown, The Hill School provides students in grades 9 through 12 with the essentials for college, careers, and life in a diverse learning and living community. Hill students come from across the country and around the world. They are athletes, artists, friends, classmates, and future leaders. An open house is October 29th at 9:30 a.m. Information is available at 610-326-1000 or online at thehill.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Lorene Carey. She's a novelist here in Philadelphia, founded a nonprofit organization called Art Sanctuary. She's a senior lecturer at the University of Pennsylvania, just appointed by Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter to the School Reform Commission, as was Wendell Pritchett. He's the chancellor and chief executive officer of Rutgers University in Camden. And Pedro Ramos has been nominated by Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett to sit on the SRC, and he's an attorney here in Philadelphia with Trujillo, Rodriguez, and Richards. And we have just one or two open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Again, what would you like the SRC, the School Reform Commission, to do? And we have Steve from Bella Vista joining us on Radio Time. Steve, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have one simple question for the panel.
Sure.
Why not just go right ahead and hire the acting superintendent as the superintendent? You know, there's pretty good things said about him, and, you know, could save the school district, the city some money, and, you know, get everything started anew.
Well, I know you're not going to make this decision on the radio today, but Lorene, Steve is saying hire Leroy Nunnery, who is the acting superintendent.
There's all kinds of sense to stopping the energy from dissipating and just go with the next person. I think, however, if you look back in hindsight, I will tell you, I have a tiny, tiny, tiny little organization, and everybody has said hiring the next leader is the most important thing there is, and if you don't do it thoughtfully and have everybody's input, you will not have everybody with you moving forward. And that's, I think, one of the biggest. You also might there might be some better match.
Mm-hmm. So the process matters. I mean, to
the
go
process
through that
matters. Right.
You're nodding your head, Wendell.
Yes, I completely agree with Lorene. Right. Process matters very much.
This gets back to this transparency issue. But one of the critiques of the SRC was that there just was not enough transparency. People didn't see how an organization such as this actually operates and makes decisions.
Right.
Door open.
Right.
I think we have to be very, as we have to, you know, I think once we have the SRC all in place, go about a process for identifying the type of leadership we were talking about earlier in the show. And I think that, you know, Dr. Nunnery has made it clear he's going to be a candidate in that process. I think it would be unfair to if he were to be selected, it'd be very unfair to him to have gone through some truncated process that didn't have the that type of integrity behind the process. I think it's important for the SRC, as it assesses the state of the district, to talk to the public, with the public, about what we see, what we think those leadership needs are, and to also not set up we shouldn't ask for input on things that we believe strongly are not going to be the case, but we should say what they are and why. If we think that we're not looking for the next big city superintendent messiah type, then we should say that up front. We should have a discussion about that, and we should say that to the public, and we should say this is the type of candidate we think we're looking for, and what are the attributes that are important. But I think we have to go about that in a responsible way, not just sort of go through the motions. Right. I think we really have to be serious about it.
I don't know whether you've come to a decision or conclusions about vouchers, but it's certainly an issue. I'm looking again at you, Wendell Pritchett. Sure. It's an issue that the governor is in support of. There are members of the legislature that are in support of this notion of vouchers. How do you think that would play out in Philadelphia? And, of course, it gives parents, and they want to focus on low-income parents in underperforming schools, gives them some option.
Yeah. Well, I think that, as I've already said, we have to be open-minded about any approach that benefits children, that figures out a way to serve all of them. So I'll start with that. Mm-hmm. However, the devil is in the details, and there are a lot of details
devils.
That we need to
understand. There are a lot of devils.
We really do need to understand a lot of the details. And we have a current system that we have to manage, and we need to take care of that also at the same time that we participate in this broader discussion. So we need to be open-minded, but there are a lot of details that are just unclear to me.
How about for you, Lorraine?
There's so much on the table. Mm-hmm. I don't want to mouth off about a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure out this, for honestly. That's true.
Well, let me ask you something else then. How do you reduce the dropout rate in Philadelphia? How do you suggest? And obviously, this is one of the many challenges before the SRC, before schools, mm-hmm. before the city, frankly, which is to make sure that more students graduate, and of mm-hmm. course, graduate with the kind of skills and abilities that mm-hmm. can be used in the 21st century.
I don't know all the answers to this. I do know the first thing is to increase the rate at which students read on grade level earlier. So we know that in the last 10 years, there has been, despite all of the tumult and drum, there has been progress on that. So 10 or 11 years ago, 1 out of 5 were reading on grade level by, say, 3rd to 5th grade. It's now true that 3 out of 5 are reading on grade level.
That's dramatic.
That is dramatic. It's not good for the other two. It's unacceptable and lousy for the other two and wrong, and we've got to do something about that. But it is true that if they're reading, then they're aimed toward graduation. If they're not, they're not. The other thing, there are all kinds of ways that people are thinking about earlier and earlier. I've heard wonderful things about the Children's Literacy Initiative and making sure that children are reading, you know, really go at K-3. That's the setup. Mm-hmm. There are lots of, and this is, again, private sector, lots of interventions along the way for the children who have not gotten it. Private sector is good for that. Sports are good for that. There are all kinds of ways. Arts are good for that. That's my first.
Well, and can
sure.
I add?
Yeah,
I
mean, go ahead.
We have made progress in this, in the specific area of the dropout rate. It has gone down. It is still embarrassingly high, and we should not be bragging about the progress that we've made. But we've made progress, and in that process, we've identified some things that work, many of which Lorraine has already mentioned. We also know that one-on-one contact with kids that we have identified mm-hmm. as likely to drop out mm-hmm. makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. And as Lorraine pointed out, the private sector plays a big role in dealing with that. And so it's important to acknowledge that the progress has been made in the last 10 years. And while we're talking about we're new members and we're talking about how we're going to come in with a different approach, we need to understand and acknowledge that things have gone well. Some things mm-hmm. have gone well in mm-hmm. the last 10 years, and we need to continue and intensify them.
I guess I would just add that here's a situation where we're still trying to catch up and fix a problem mm-hmm. that has shifted on us. And we certainly have done better in the graduation rate. I think there are strategies that are data that are supported by research about how you can intervene, you know, attendance, behavior, performance in core subjects. We do know that, you know, kindergarten readiness, reading on grade level with 3rd grade, whether you get through 9th grade successfully, all are factors. But at the end of the day, we also know that this, you know, it's critical for us to graduate high school students, but we also know that's not enough. The rest of the world has gone on to look at, you know, at K-14 and the skills that are really needed to be able to sustain yourself and a family in the world. And high school diploma is also just not enough. Right. And we have to address, we have to continue with these strategies, but we also have to be looking forward to appreciate that we're trying to fix towards a standard that has moved, you know, that where mm-hmm. the bar has moved up.
Well, you run a university across the river there, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah. Well, that is the world that I live in, and I will point out that all three of us have deep, experience in universities.
That's right.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we were appointed, and that is crucial. And we know several things. We know that even children graduating from high school are often not prepared to be successful in college, and we have to have deeper connections between universities and the K-12 system. And I think we have an opportunity in Philadelphia because we do have universities that are interested. We have a lot of work to do to really make seamless connections between the universities and K-12, but we've made progress there too.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Let me see what looks like Sarah from Fort Washington has to say. Sarah, go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Are you on the air there, Sarah? No? Yes? No? Okay. What about VOTEC? And there's not. I mean, there are vocational technical schools in mm-hmm. Philadelphia, but you know, not every child. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs, I think, was one of them. is going to make it in a college or university, Lorene. And I guess this gets back to this notion of options and choices, mm-hmm. and giving kids and then young adults skills to use in the world.
Yeah. I mean, Frederick Douglass was talking about that, right, in the 1800s, that it's easier to get one of our children into Harvard than into a trade school. I don't think that's exactly true. I was on Saturday at the high school fair at the school district, mm-hmm. and actually stopped at more of the VOTEC schools and talked to young people. I talked to one young man who's being trained as an emergency medical EMS person. So we were talking. Mm-hmm. Another with the culinary, and someone else with graphic design, and they are actually more fired up because they already have found their passion, as yes. opposed to kids who say, geez, you know, I don't know, I'm studying, I'll learn later. But these kids are fired up and they're aiming. I also talked to some ROTC people who, and again, the idea was, let's take these young people, let's give them skills now. And it also gets into this crazy thing we've done with all kinds of children across class lines for the last 10 or 15 years, where we've been separating self-esteem from skill. And as we know, self-esteem without skill is nothing. It's narcissism, it's egotism, and it plows them under, because if you don't have the skill, it doesn't matter.
Right.
You know, I feel good about myself and I can't do anything. Great. So linking those up, particularly in children who already know that I love cars and I'm good with automotive. I love computers and I just want to get in there and, you know, work with them. I think that's incredibly important. And once you have that skill, you can then go on.
Yeah.
Right? I think they're... I just love them because they do stuff, and I like kids to do
yes,
stuff.
I agree. And we've done shows about that great automotive program in West yeah. Philly High School, and right. and had, you know, listened to the kids talking about what they do, and it's, and they compete.
Yeah.
Well, we are talking about Philadelphia Public Schools today on Radio Times with Wendell Pritchett, Pedro Ramos, and Lorene Carey. Should we invest more in that, or just make sure that those options are there for kids?
Well, I don't know the answer to whether we should invest more. I know we should invest wisely, and we know that there are successful programs. I also think that we should find ways to provide opportunities for all kids to do something, as Lorene said, because we know that a multifaceted education is what's going to prepare people for success in life, right? So while we want to target and identify what kids' passions are, we want to expose them to many things. And I think that some of the charter schools, the Renaissance schools, some of the different approaches that we've seen have tried to do that, and we need to figure out which ones work and support them.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY.
Lorene Carey sounds like an interesting choice.
And you are listening to WHYY FM Philadelphia. Ed Cunningham, we're just having so much fun listening to Radio Times, we forget we have a job to do, and that job is to ask you one more time to become a member of WHYY and support this terrific program that you count on day in and day out. I suspect you know the number right by now, but I'm going to give it to you one more time. I hope you'll use it. It's 1-888-345-9499, or, of course, on the web at WHYY.org. And, you know, Ed, this is just such a typical example of why people ought to embrace Radio Times. You have three new members of the Philadelphia School Reform Commission looking at the daunting challenge of restoring credibility to that organization and figuring out a way to improve the education of those kids. And they are here because they know that when they sit down with Marty Moskowain, A, they're going to have time to make their points. It's going to be an hour. B, it's going to be a substantive exchange, not a shout fest. And they also know that Marty isn't going to give them a free ride. You heard her ask them in pointed terms, I have heard this before. We've had well-intentioned people come here before talking about change. How will you be different? She confronted them with the story of a kid who had been mercilessly bullied and had no response from school officials, but she did it in a respectful way and let them make their points. Gosh, isn't that terrific? Isn't that why you turn in day in and tune in day in and day out? It doesn't just happen. It costs money. We need those audio engineers. We need her producers booking these folks day in and day out. And we count on you to sustain it. Help us now. It's the last day. We'll shut up when we're finished. And the number is 1-888-345-9499 or at whyy.org.
Right. And, Dave, there is good news to report, because when we reported in dark and early this morning before 6 o'clock, we were told that we were 650 pledges short of making our overall goal to end this membership drive once and for all. And as you and I sit here right now, that shortfall now is down to 168 pledges. Somebody just pledged online. You just heard that ping. You better make that 167 pledges short. And here's one thing I think would be cool. Would this not be great to see if we could end this membership drive at the end of Radio Times with Marty Moskowitz? Wouldn't it be appropriate, based on everything Dave has just said to you, which you know is true, that you could end this membership drive at the end of Radio Times? It would be a real tribute to Marty and her staff and her program if we could get those final 167 pledges by noon at 1-888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. As soon as they are here, we'd stop, and I say it would be poetic justice if we were able to do it by 12 noon.
Yeah, I think that people who listen to Marty during the day are a special community. I mean, these a lot of folks can't get to it. And if you are in a position where either you happen to be working at home or at home or driving a lot or in an office where the radio is on, you know what a valuable companion that show is. And we'd love you to step up now and make that pledge at 1-888-345-9499 or, of course, online at whyy.org. Some terrific thank you gifts are waiting that our volunteers can tell you about. But the important thing is just to take that step. You know, and Ed and I are here asking you to do something that you don't have to do. I mean, you know that you're going to turn on the radio tomorrow. And if you don't pledge, Marty will still be there. But let me give you two reasons to do it. First of all, it's simple. This thing survives on us all chipping in. Just